This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Welcome to episode 223 of the Family Gamers Podcast, or should I say, the One Board Family Gamers with Sidekicks Podcast.
We do have a very special show for you. We have two special guests. We have Isaac Villa from Gaming with Sidekicks, and we have Ryan Gutowski from One Board Family. And we are going to do a roundtable discussion of our top five games of 2020. But first, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And unsurprisingly, I have a fact about the number 223.
All right, lay it on me.
So this is actually not really a fact. It is a series of facts inspired by the number 223.
Okay.
And I say it like that because I'm, in fact, talking about the most famous, or one of the most famous ammunition calibers in the world, the Remington 223. Have you ever heard of this?
I have never heard of it.
Okay, no, I tried. How about 5.56? Have you ever heard of 5.56?
Maybe.
Okay. All right, so here's a loose timeline. I found this from a website. I don't remember what website. I didn't write it down. That would have been responsible, but here's a loose timeline. Early 1950s, Eugene Stoner creates a radical new rifle design around the 308 Winchester. Have you heard of the Winchester 308?
Yes.
Okay, good. Around the 308 Winchester cartridge called the AR-10. In the late 1950s, the U.S. Army, through an organization called CONARC, because everything is an acronym for the Army, I don't know, publishes the requirements for the Army's next-generation battle rifle, because everything is an RFP with the Army as well. In 1963, Remington, maker of the 223, Remington Arms releases a new cartridge called the 223 Remington, along with a version of the Remington 760 chambered for this new cartridge. In 1964, the next year, the U.S. Army adopts the AR-15 and designates it the M-16, which we've heard about, with semi-auto and full-auto firing modes. The U.S. Army also creates a military-specific variant of the 223 Remington called the 5.56 NATO.
Okay.
And in my research, there's a microscopic difference in the specs between the 223 and the 5.56. In 1994, the U.S. military officially adopts the M4, which is a newer rifle variant based on the M16 AR-15. But the interesting thing here is that caliber, the 223 Remington, spawned the 5.56, which is still in use today. Actually, the 223 is also in use today. But they're different and incompatible and yet almost exactly the same.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's the Army. Anyway, that is my fact based on the number 223.
Let's not forget to thank our sponsor, First Move Financial. Did you know that most people pay down debt, pay for mid-sized goals, or save their tax refunds? Many financial experts out there tell you not to get a refund because you're giving Uncle Sam an interest-free loan. First Move disagrees. If you're more likely to use your refund to either save or pay down debt than you would if you got an extra $50 a month, why not let Uncle Sam have it for a few months so you can get it all at once and make better choices? If you want to talk to First Move Financial about other habits you can build to take that next step towards your goals, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to schedule a call.
Thanks so much to First Move Financial for sponsoring the Family Gamers Podcast. So why don't we just do this? We are going to take a very quick break. We're going to hear a snap review, and then we're going to jump right into that roundtable discussion. And then we'll come back and we'll close out the show.
All right, sounds good.
Okay.
A snap review for The Bears and the Bees. The Bears and the Bees is a game from Grandpa Beck's Games for 2-5 players, ages 8+. Take turns to lay out cards into the common hive and try to be the first to get rid of all your cards.
So Andrew, let's talk about the art in The Bears and the Bees.
Absolutely. So all of the art is captured on these hexagonal cards that you're going to be playing with. There's 7 colors that the cards can be. They have different sides that can potentially be different colors. They're all very easy to distinguish. We have the second edition of the game, so the colors are a little bit brighter than the first edition, and it works excellently as long as nobody in your group is colorblind. There might be some struggles. There's a little bit of veining on the edges of these cards, which are meant to represent petals, so you might be able to deal with it if you have a colorblindness issue, but otherwise, they're beautiful, they're well illustrated. The game is called The Bears and the Bees. Everything we've talked about has been flower or honey related or honeycomb related. There are 3 bear cards in the game. The bears are, they're cute, right?
Yeah.
But they do look realistic and they look like they would be fierce, especially to bees.
Maybe it's that honey dripping down their chins that makes them so endearing.
They are cute. I mean, other than them being large and terrifying, wouldn't you love to pet a bear?
Yeah.
There are also bees on some of the cards. They look pretty realistic as well. Not enough to creep you out, but they're not cute fuzzies either.
I mean, they're a little fuzzy.
You knew what I meant.
Okay, enough about the art. Let's talk about the mechanics.
Yes, sir.
All players start with an equal number of hexagonal cards. On the table is the beginning of the beehive, the queen bee, and 1 honeycomb card.
On your turn, play a card from your hand so that at least 2 sides match up with open edges of the hive on the table. The colors must match. Again, honey is wild and can match any color. And if you play a card that matches 3 or more sides, you get an extra turn and you get to play again. The one exception here, you cannot play a bee card that touches the queen bee.
Some cards are harder to play, but they give extra rewards. Worker bees have every side a different color. If you can play one of these, you force another player to draw a card.
Flowers have all 6 sides the same color. Play one of these, and all of the other players must draw a card.
Bears are cards after my own heart. They just want honey.
Play a bear card anywhere, as long as it can touch some honey. But no one can play a card where it would touch a bear. Once you play a bear, then you can give 1 of your cards to another player.
This is how you won the last time we played.
Uh-huh.
There are some other options, too. If you can't or don't want to play a card from your hand, you can choose to draw a card instead, or even discard 1 of your cards and draw 2 cards. When someone plays out their last card, the round ends. Score everyone's remaining cards.
If you have any honeycomb cards in your hand, they are 5 points. Bees and flowers are 10, and bears are 15.
After 3 rounds, the player with the lowest score wins.
So, this is Grandpa Beck's Games. We've played some of their games before. We've reviewed some of their games before. What were our expectations with The Bears and the Bees?
Well, as we've found, Grandpa Beck's games are always very family-friendly, with minimal reading and intuitive rules. That's certainly the case here. In fact, there's no reading in this game at all. It's mostly just color matching. So a kid much younger than 8 can play, our 6-year-old did, although they may not always make great choices for where to put their cards.
Okay, so that's what we expected, and we got it. What were we surprised about with this game, Asher?
With any, like, the bears and the bees, we would expect more bears. There's only 3 in the entire deck, so it's very possible to play around without seeing any of them at all.
So there's 3 bear cards, and maybe 100, maybe more, of the bee cards. It's a little mismatched, but that's the game.
We found in playing it that rounds can sometimes go very quickly, but more often they drag out as people are forced to draw more and more cards. Because of that, we actually usually only play 1 round, unless someone goes out very, very quickly.
The Bears and the Bees is the kind of game where if you're playing in a mixed group with kids and with older people, it's probably easier to play that shorter game. If you were playing with a bunch of adults after the kids went to bed, that longer game might fit a little bit better because you can be social while you're playing the game. This game does not have a high cognitive load, which means that you're not spending a lot of time thinking and experiencing analysis paralysis while trying to figure out how to play your cards, which makes it a good, light, family-friendly, and social experience to play.
So, Asher, what would we rate The Bears and the Bees from Grandpa Beck's Games?
Do you remember how we said that there's only 3 bears in the entire deck? Well, we rate The Bears and the Bees 3 bears out of 5.
And that's The Bears and the Bees.
In a snap!
Hello, and welcome to the One Board Family Gamers with Sidekicks podcast.
Yeah, that's what we're calling this thing. We have a bunch of our favorite people on the line this week. We are going to do like a little best games of 2020, or really favorite games of 2020,
yeah,
kind of roundtable discussion.
Thing.
Right. So we have with us, we have Ryan Gutowski from One Board Family.
Hello, Smith family.
Hello. And we have Isaac Villa, the resident bass from Gaming with Sidekicks.
I mean, Ryan's kind of got me beat here, it sounds like. I feel like he's competing with it here.
You guys are making me feel like a counter.
we would do good in a harmony quartet for the four of us here.
That would work out.
All right. I'll apologize in advance. That'll be great. So, <That's> great. So what we decided to do is we each picked our top five games of 2020.
And each and I collaborated.
So this is kind of like the Family Gamers top five, the One Board Family top five, the Gaming with Sidekicks top five, or the One Board Family Gamers with Sidekicks top five times three. However you want to name this thing, whatever it is. That's what we're going to talk about.
Perfect.
And just to mix it up, we also threw in our most disappointing release of the year. Mm-hmm. And this is a tricky thing because it does not mean bad board game.
I don't know about that.
Depending on the person. It just doesn't definitively mean bad board game. I think that's it's really just about the disconnect between expectations and reality. Right. That's the most disappointing board game of the year. So I guess we'll go like 5 to 2, and then before we give our number ones, we'll hit the disappointing one, and then we'll give our number ones, and then we'll be done. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
I like it.
All right.
I like it.
All right. So Anitra, you are the lady in the room. So why don't you give our number five game of 2020?
Our number five game of 2020 has got to be Abandon All Artichokes from Game Right.
This game is great.
Okay.
Have you guys played Abandon All Artichokes?
I've seen it, but I haven't played it.
It is a deck wrecking game.
I've seen you guys post it.
Yeah.
Instead of a deck building game.
Yeah. So you start this game with 10 artichokes in your hand.
Five in your hand.
Mm-hmm. Ten artichokes in your deck, five in your hand. And your goal, the stated goal of the game is have a hand of five cards that has no artichokes in it. And so essentially the gameplay is play a card. What is it? Play a card, pick up a card, play a card.
You pick up a card from the central like garden market row, and then you can play as many cards as you can play from your hand. And then you discard whatever's left over and draw a new hand of five cards.
So the deck of garden cards, none of them are artichokes. But there are all sorts of different things that allow you to discard cards or trade cards or whatever. And so unlike a deck builder where you're building up your deck to become more powerful, you're kind of building your deck, but you're really building your deck in order to cull cards at the same time. Or just trying to gather a massive amount of cards and hope that the odds work in your favor that you've drowned out the artichoke so you get a hand of five cards that has no artichokes in it.
Yeah, it cracks me up that every time we play this as a family, our oldest only goes for the cards that let you get rid of artichokes. So she ends up with a deck of like three or four cards. She picks it up. She plays a couple cards. She puts it back down. She picks it up. She plays a couple cards. She puts it back down until she can actually manage to get rid of every single artichoke because there's no deck left to draw from.
What's the player count?
Maybe up to five, I think. I think you can play it up to five. That seems great.
I'm not gonna sounds like it moves pretty fast, game, too.
But I've never beaten her at it.
I've beaten her.
She's a big fan.
I mean, it's a Game Right game, right? So it does move pretty quickly. It's very cute. It's family friendly. It's got a weight of 1.7 on BGG. BGG says it goes up to four players.
It says 2 to 4 players. You could probably give everybody slightly fewer cards to start with to have it go up to five instead.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I don't see why you wouldn't be able to do that.
Start with 8 artichokes instead of 10. Yeah, that works out because there'd be 40 in the deck.
Yep. So that's our number five, Abandon All Artichokes from Game Right.
So we get a lot of play with our individual families, right? I think that's kind of a good front end. You guys, what's the age ranges for everybody? Like I have a 16, almost 17-year-old and 14-year-old at home that I'm playing with.
Yeah, our kids are around that. I've got a 12, 15, and 17-year-old.
We have 12.
We have the youngins.
Yeah, we have the youngins. We have a 12, 9, and a 6.
Gotcha.
So it definitely affects, you know, what titles may find their places onto our individual list.
Oh, absolutely.
Here.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, I think we've talked about it probably offline that our list, we expect the Family Gamers list is going to skew a little bit simpler just because of that exact thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got gamers in those kids. Our 9-year-old especially is a pretty big gamer.
Yes.
But the ability to grok that level of complexity that's needed to tackle the, you know, the kind of the classic best of list kind of stuff is just not there with our kids yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. it will be before you know it. That's the crazy part.
We're getting
oh, yeah. looking forward to it.
And we started this podcast when the 12-year-old was 7. So, yeah. Oh,
wow. Wow. Yeah.
So you get to see the evolution for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, especially with the 9-year-old because he's the one who's way more into it. They all play games, but the 9-year-old's the one who's just obsessed.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally get that. My son is the one who will always play a game with me. My daughter, it takes a little bit of coaxing. My wife will often play. You know, we sat down and played 12 days today, right? We can get them to play. It's just a matter of getting the right game and the right time. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Ryan, you want to take the next one, sir?
Yeah, I'll take my number 5 game is Rallyman GT. So I did not know I wanted this game until I played it on Board Game Arena. I'm sitting around one night and Rick and Bob, who are also writers at One Board Family, they invited me to Rallyman GT on BGA and they said, hey, you got to check this out. I personally love Downforce. I run a Formula D league at my work that has gone 3.5 years now up until the pandemic. And so wow. We would actually take our lunch times to play Formula D.
Whole, the concept yeah, of having any kind of board game league.
I know. It's so out of the ordinary right now. So Rallyman GT, I was like, it's another racing game, whatever. It looks cool. I played it, and the risk reward, just the mechanics of the game work so well. Basically, you are racing your rally cars around this track. I love the fact that the tracks are shapeable by whoever's setting it up. In the book, I think there's like 10 tracks in the book, and it says, you know, easier, more advanced, stuff like that. But you can just build your own track out of the pieces that are in there. And that's what I think I love. Formula D, I've got 3 different track sets. And then with Downforce, I've got all the track sets because I love Downforce and it's a family favorite. But for Rallyman GT, I can build whatever I can imagine. And it's really fun to build out this track, to race it, to push your luck, to just wreck in a bad corner, to just try to laugh it off and get back in the pack. Rallyman GT is fantastic. Played it digitally for a couple weeks. And then when we went on a little miniature weekend vacation, went down to Florida for a couple days just to see a friend of ours, I had to have it. So I picked it up and played it like 3 times that weekend.
Nice. So tell me a little bit about Rallyman. So Anitra, you've played it on BGA, right?
No? I saw it on BGA. Okay, I thought you had.
So obviously I'm familiar with Downforce. We've played a lot of Downforce.
Yeah.
What's different about Rallyman GT? I assume with Rallyman GT, your primary goal is to place first and not
fitting mechanics. It's a dice system. So there are dice. There is a die for each gear. Okay. So you got first, second, third, fourth. And so let's say I was in third gear. I could either break and go down. I can either go down gears one at a time, or I can hard break and go down to first gear and then build back up. And so it's this system of planning your movement by putting out the different gear dice on the track. And then you have 2 choices. You could either roll the dice one by one, which whenever you feel like stopping, you stop, and that's just where your car lands. Or you can do a thing called flat out, which you take all the dice that you've placed, you take them all up into your hand, you roll them all at once. If you wind up with 3 or more caution symbols, you wreck based on the gear that you were in. So it's a really pushing your luck when you do that flat out. I mean, it's really thrilling, like for a game like this.
Sounds like it. I might have to hook up with you guys on BGA and check it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bob and I could definitely sit down and show you the game. It's a lot of BGA taught me how to play the game. And then when I got it in my hands, I was so excited about it. And I'll just sit there and build out a track and be like, okay, this is exactly what I want.
Sounds awesome. All right. Number 5 from One Board Family is Rallyman GT.
All right, Isaac, perfect. It's your turn.
Yes, yes. So number 5 for me is a little game I got to preview at PAX last year, last board game convention that any of us managed to go to in 2019. That was from Leader Games, and that is Fort. Fort is the deck builder that I didn't realize I needed. There's just something different about that game. I've played, and we've all played, a numerous amount of deck builders, but to be, like, it's just something special about the way that game lays itself out. And playing the cards, having the cards actually go into that yard area where people can steal them from you on your turn. I really like that mechanic, because it really, of all the games I played in the recent past with phone addicted players, we know those players, the people who can't put their phone down, they're playing the game. Like, you got to be paying attention between rounds in this game. Like, there is no, oh good, I got four turns. And I love that in a game. I love the theme. I love the, you know, building up your little fort, the little bits with the pizza and the and the goods. Those are so good, right? And they're simple, but they're just so cool. And recessed boards are so nice.
They're so nice. They are.
I think the first time I ever saw one of those was with Scythe, maybe. And I am if I open a board game box and there's a recessed board in it, I'm immediately excited.
It's just, it's such a, like, it's a top to bottom, it's a very, very well made game in a small box. It plays so easy, it's smooth, it's got a really decent price point too. I think it's an under $30 game, and you're getting a lot in that box for what you're getting. So gotta go with Fort for my number five.
Yeah, I like that yard mechanic too. I find that when I've played Fort, it makes me think really hard about which cards I'm going to play, because if it's a card that's, you know, not real useful to me right now, but would be really helpful to one of my opponents, I'm like, could I find a way to use it so they can't take it?
Yeah, I love that. I love anything that gets away from the solitaire aspect of gaming, right? Anything that means I'm going to interact with people at the table in any fashion, right, is going to be a lot of fun. And this one definitely puts that in there. Gets the little bit of that jab, right, to your opponents without being incredibly, like, aggressive, could destroy their game kind of jabs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially in a deck builder. I mean, one of the biggest reasons why I could never get into a game like Dominion was because you're basically playing a game next to someone else.
Yeah.
And I just, if I'm going to be playing a board game, like, I'd rather be playing with people, and if I'm just going to be playing, like, near someone, I'll just go play a video game kind of thing. You know what I mean? So,
sure.
I'm totally with you on Fort. That was a game I pre-ordered for my FLGS because it was, you know, middle of the pandemic. I think it came out in August for FLGSs. People were pre-ordering it on the Leader Games site, and I'm friends with Marshall, and so I'm talking to him, and I'm like, man, everybody's getting their games, and they haven't made it to the stores yet, and it was killing me, and then finally came in, so I was able to pick that one up. But
Fort was one of those games where when you say deck builder, it's like, yes, I understand deck builders, but then this puts enough of a twist that it doesn't feel like a deck builder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when I told, because Erin loves deck builders, she loves Clank. We own a lot of the Clank series because she loves deck builders. She loves Quest for El Dorado. And so when I put this in front of her, I was like, I don't know if she's going to enjoy this. The first game was a little rocky. Second game, she knocked it out of the park, and it was one of those games that Saturday morning, Sunday morning, we brew a pot of coffee and we sit there and play Fort. And so it's also the game that I refuse to give to the other two guys on One Board Family, because the original agreement when we got in the review copy was to hand it off to Rick next. And I chose not to, and I told him I was choosing not to. So.
Well, and it's so cool you mentioned Clank too. It's so cool that a mechanic like deck building that we all just assume is like, ugh, okay, that's been said and done, still has room for new things that are fun and different.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, ours, you know, Abandon All Artichokes is technically a deck builder, and it's completely different from Clank or from Fort. So.
Yep, for sure. And the art's amazing, which is another big part of that.
It's it's hilarious. I love it. I just giggle my way through games of Fort, pretty much. All right. Well, let's jump up from number five to number four. We'll keep going around in a circle. So for us, our number four game is a game that we actually got 3 weeks ago, maybe something like that.
About then, but we first played it over a year ago. Before it was released.
This is actually another release from Game Right. This is Shifting Stones. Have you guys seen this game?
I have not.
Okay.
I have not.
Okay. So Shifting Stones, the concept is very simple. And again, you know, we tend to skew a little bit more casual, a little bit younger, because we're playing with younger players. So if you imagine those puzzles where you're
nine-piece sliding puzzle.
The sliding puzzles where you're trying to make a picture. Imagine that. Now you have a 3x3 grid of 9 tiles. You draw 4 cards. You can do one of two things. You can discard a card to swap two adjacent tiles, or you can discard a card to flip a tile over. Your goal is to orient the shared tiles such that they match a pattern that's on a card in your hand. Okay? If it matches that pattern, you reveal that card and you say, I've matched this pattern, you get those points. That's the entire game. So
okay.
There's a set of 3 that are identical, and you know, it's like orange on one side and it's always green on the other side. And there's kind of cool like Mayan style, almost hieroglyphic.
Yeah, one set is like
embossed
tree whatever. And seed, and another set is like horse and boat. Yeah,
stuff like that. So there's like 3 of them that are the same, right? So they're always the same. You know, you've got like a guy that says if you flip this over, it's always going to be this other card. So there's no memory involved. You know, so the cognitive load is not super high. So you've got a set of 3 and then like
another set of 3.
Another set of 3 and then a set of 2 and then one that's unique, which is the sun and the moon. And so you kind of know when those patterns come up, you're like, okay, this pattern is going to be harder because it uses the sun moon tile. And that's the only one that I can move around and kind of do these things with. So there's a couple other things, like if you don't want to take a turn, you can draw 2 extra cards and stuff like that. But the meat and potatoes of the game is this really nice, quick tile adjustment kind of thing. I mean, there's not a ton of things you can do with your cards. You discard cards to move stuff, or you play a card to match that pattern. And the total play card count is different at different player counts, but it's like usually at like 4. Once somebody has 9 cards out, that triggers the end game, and then you kind of go around and finish that round or something like that. But the game is immediately understandable. We can play with my mom. We can play with your mom, who's like 78. I can't remember.
My mom is 80.
Oh, dang it. Anyway, whatever.
We can play with our 6-year-old.
But we can play with our 6-year-old. We can play with literally anybody. And it's beautiful. It looks great. Game Right is... I don't know how they make their games as inexpensive as they do. I've said it a million times.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's super low price point. I think it was on sale last week for like $12. This is a great game that you could bring to like a youth group or something like that, because it's like everybody would understand immediately how to play the game. And that's Shifting Stones from Game Right.
Well, and it's got that that light amount of player interaction too. Like, it's kind of solo-y, except other people are moving the tiles around in between your turns, so you can't set stuff up very far in advance.
Right, that's true. And the tiles are like, I don't know, 1/8-inch thick, like embossed cardboard. So they're chunky, they look great, they feel great. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Nice.
Excellent. Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
So my number 4 is not a cheat, but it is actually a 2020 re-release. Smartphone Inc. is one of my top games of all time. It was the one Kickstarter project that the minute I played it, I was kicking myself that I didn't back it. I played the prototype probably a couple weeks after it closed, and I just sat there. I was like, man, this is so good. And it just, there's something about it that just clicks with me as far as like managing the inventory and stock. You're basically the CEO of a mobile empire, and you're trying to sell your mobile devices to different parts of the world. And Smartphone Inc. came off of Kickstarter and was Arcane Wonders and Cosmodrome Games put it out. It arrived, I think, over the summer at some point. And the version update 1.1, which is their expansion, is fantastic too, because that's actually new to 2020. That one's actually a 2 and 3 player board, which plays so good. I introduced Aaron to it when we got a copy in the fall, and we played on the big board, and then we busted out the 1.1 update the next weekend, and we sat down and played that one with, it's just basically North America. And so your focus is a little smaller, and it's perfect for 2 and 3 players. And so it's just such a great system. It makes you think. It causes you to make some rash decisions at times. And there was one game where I thought, you know what, I'm so far ahead, I can just do whatever I want with my cell phones. End up coming in 3rd place out of 5 because I just mismanaged my inventory and boosted the price too high, and people undercut me. And it was, I was kicking myself then too. So, but yeah, Smartphone Inc., a little bit of a cheat because it's a 2020 re-release.
That's okay.
Totally okay with that. Yes. I'm preemptively very okay with that.
I wonder why that would be.
So did you end up getting this newer version of it then?
Yes. So I didn't even know it was a 2018 game at the time. I saw we were at Origins and the appointments to play Smartphone Inc. at Origins 2019, it was just solid booked up. And I was like, you know what? Because I really wanted to play that and Pipeline. Those were the two that I didn't get to at Origins.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And so I just, the amount of time that it would have taken, the waiting, it was one of those things I didn't get to. The art was really, I like the art. I love the little translucent cubes. And when I finally sat down, learned the rule book with the prototype, it had come to Punchboard Media and it had been passed around Punchboard Media at the time. One of the prototypes right after the Kickstarter ended. And so, yeah, it's such a good game. It makes you think in just the right way, where it's not overwhelmingly deep, but I feel like the moment-to-moment actions, I've been able to teach this to newer gamers. They caught on and loved it. So I feel like it's good enough for entry-level gamers, but there's some advanced things with this game.
Nice. Yeah, awesome. I saw it at conventions and stuff like that. It just didn't really grab me. I don't know why that is. I mean, I'd certainly be up for checking it out sometime, especially hearing your glowing review.
I love the game. And it's so weird because, you know, when you look at it, it's basically a map with some cubes and recessed board.
Boards. No wonder why you like it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just one of those things where it clicks with me. There's a puzzle to it. The steps are very clear. Like each round, there are these specific, like, this is when you do this. If you have this, this is when you research. And it's just, it's very smooth. And love the game.
Nice.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things. On our team, JT and Stuart are big fans of it as well. Again, it's one of those that I'd love to play, just haven't had that opportunity to. We've got a pretty good game group in my town here where all of us tend to back certain things. Like if one of us is backing a Kickstarter, we place you normally, right, pre-pandemic, we were playing every week together. So that's one that's in the group, but haven't had a chance to game with most of those guys. So it'll come, and I'll get a chance to play it. And I'm confident that it'll make its way up based on everything I've heard and especially with what you're saying there. All right, number four for me. Number four is thematically my least favorite animal, but man, there's just something about the puzzly, abstract nature of Calico from AEG that I can't stop playing this game. And it is one that my wife loves, and a good key for my wife for good games that she loves. She loves a good abstract game. She likes something puzzly that she can kind of have to think through a little bit, but not something that's just got too many steps into the puzzle that it's like, I don't want to really brain burn, 20 steps into this. She wants something that's going to be a challenge.
I completely understand where your wife is at.
And Calico hits that. Like, I play games seat of my pants. I don't really plan more than a step or two ahead. And if you try and do that in Calico, you're going to lose. There's just something about that quilt building. And has everybody had a chance to play this one?
I haven't played it. I saw it at a convention, probably PAX, and just was being pulled around by kids. So they were like, quilts, cats, whatever, Mom, let's go look at this other thing.
We took a preview of it at Origins, and it was so beautiful at the time. I think Beth Sobel's the artist, correct?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was so beautiful.
And Beth Sobel art, to me, like, that's almost a no-brainer. I'll play a game that Beth does the art for without even thinking about it. But there's just something about the abstract thing of this game. And as you're trying to build these quilt pieces, you have a set tile that's a hexagon tile that you're trying to match colors and shapes based on three points in your quilt. And there's some overlap where one of the little hexes is trying to get a certain pattern, but the other one is too, and they may be touching. So you have to match them up. And there's six different colors and six different patterns. And there's three combinations of each. So there's a lot of tiles. So if you want a purple in a certain pattern, there's only three of those in there in the entire bag. Mm-hmm. And so you have to really think through like, well, but I could use this pattern with this color. And it's definitely brain burny, you know, the cat theme for it. I'm willing to overlook in the same way that I sat down and played the Isle of Cats, even though I was like, ugh, I don't like cats, but both good cat games. However, Calico is the one that made my top five. Highly, highly recommend this one. If you're a big fan of puzzle abstract games, you will not be disappointed with this one. And I think very recently I was listening to Dice Tower, and I think Vassal said this was probably one of only one or two games in 2020 that has like legs that'll last for like 5-10 years from now. People will still be playing it. I think there's a reason for that, and this one's definitely one to check out.
Sure.
All right. I think you're speaking an interest language on that one.
Very much so.
She just added it to her Amazon wish list. I just want you to know.
Nice. Perp.
I did. My secret Santa out there can take a look and maybe buy it for me for Christmas. Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. So our number three is also a very new release. I think it only came out a month ago, maybe. But I love so much about this game, and I did not really expect to, which is Prisma Arena from Hub Games.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this might skew a little bit younger than you guys are usually looking at. But the fact that you've got an arena fighting game that's all about fighting away despair and just training up together, and everybody levels up. It's just that if you're better at it, you level up faster. Everything about this game is great. And then there are the stickers.
Yes.
So the thing that really, like, okay, foundationally, Prisma Arena is an arena fighting game where you are moving and attacking and comboing your moves and attacks together to defeat your opponents. Like, that's the foundation of the game at its core. But the thing that elevates this game is that it's essentially a legacy game in the sense that your characters are leveling up, and when you open the box, they even have little lockers that you can, like, hang up your character's clean, nice, sick clothes in their little locker. And your characters grow over time, and you get extra powers called Prisma powers that you can then turn around mm-hmm. and leverage in your combat. But over the whole thing, there's this very like metagame concept that it's essentially, what I call it always is the X-Men danger room, right? It's this idea where like you're fighting and you're not pulling punches, but at the end of the day, everybody is fighting to get better, right? And the idea that you can sit there next to your son or daughter or whatever, and you're like, oh, look at this cool Prisma power that I just unlocked. And, oh, you know, this is how I'm going to change up my character's armor for next time. And that metagame aspect of that, it has to start with a solid foundational game. But if it was just that solid foundational game, like, it would be fine. But all of that extra stuff really just kind of builds on top of a really, really good foundation and makes it one of the best games of the year for us.
And it's a lot simpler than other arena fighting games I've seen. Like, our gamer child likes, it's not Beyblades, it's one of those other ones.
Bakugan,
I don't know.
Bakugan.
All of these other ones, I see them and like every single thing you buy has different powers. And I have just, it's always felt like so much investment for so little reward that I just don't want to play them. And Prisma Arena is completely the opposite of that while still being an arena fighting game. The rules were really simple to learn. There's not a ton you can do early on, but that's okay because they also have some leveling mechanisms if somebody who's a higher level is playing a lower level that brings you back down to be on more or less equal footing.
Yeah, I love Prisma Arena. Just a quick note, Prisma Arena is in my top 10 for the year that's going to go up on One Board Family. I don't have younger kids. All my kids are teenagers. So I don't know how accessible it is to younger kids. When Aaron and I actually played it, the first time we sat down with it, we were kind of conflicted. The game was fantastic, but we also weren't sure totally what the age range should be because it felt a little more advanced than a kid's game, but the style and artwork and everything pointed to, hey, an 8 to 10 year old would love this game. It like checks all those boxes. And see, so that for me, I'm sitting there saying, would my 8 to 10 year old, I think Kendall, my youngest one, is the one who catches on and beats the crap out of us regularly in board games. But at 8, would Josiah or Emily have played it? I don't know, you know? So it was one of those things where when I saw you guys posting about it, that your kids were playing it, I was like, okay, maybe it is for that age range. And I didn't connect it the first time I played.
Well, so
that age range.
Hub Games advertises it as 10 plus, but I would really say that 8 plus is about right.
Okay.
Like, our 6-year-old has tried to play and can't really handle it.
You pretty much, like, reading is kind of a core competency.
Yes, yes.
It is.
Well, reading and the skills that go along with it, being able to look a couple of steps ahead.
Yeah, sequencing. But they do a really good job because the way that you identify acceptable combos is through symbology. It's not
correct. Yeah,
creating some other kind of framework.
Yeah, it's just stuff. I have a card with an X and it has a line down to an O, so I can play a card with an O on it. Right. Yeah,
so they do a really good job with that.
I was thinking the strategy of it, like when a character gets knocked out, if they haven't been played that round, what's the best time to come back in? That type of strategy. It feels like more of an adult game. You know, and so, sure. And that's one of the things that why Prisma Arena really connected with Aaron and I, and we both love playing it. And so when I leveled up my first time and I looked at her and I was like, you're one checkbox behind me, but I feel great. I leveled up this time, you know, and just kind of flaunting your new armor as you get back into the arena.
Pretty much.
They do a really good job with capturing that sense of accomplishment outside of the actual formal game. And that's, I think, something that was just so unique to us was, I mean, we've played Pandemic Legacy and it's fine. You know, we played My City, and My City we have a lot of fun with, but there's something different about this. This is almost like a combination of like a legacy game and like opening a box of Magic cards kind of. There's some weird, I don't know exactly, I can't put my finger on it, but there's something really, really cool about that metagame that we really, really enjoyed.
Well, and I will say, as parents with younger children, those little cling stickers to customize not just your uniform, but like your hair and your accessories and all that stuff.
Yes.
I've heard other people be like, I don't know, man, they might get unsticky over time. And I'm like, let me tell you how many times my children have changed the stickers on their Prisma Arena characters, and they are still sticky.
Nice.
It's well made and well thought out that these are going to get used over and over and over again.
What I was going to ask you, you're talking like stickers or like window clings? Is that
they're closer kind of to like a window cling kind of material?
Okay, they're they're very reusable.
Yeah, they're designed to be reusable.
Yeah, it's a thick vinyl.
Nice. So if it's a legacy type style game, and I have not played this, what happens when you want to drop a kid in or out? Does it have something to kind of have that ease of add or subtract a player?
So keep in mind, this is an arena fighting game. So you can have two players fighting, you can have three players fighting, you can have four players fighting. And it's either team or free-for-all.
Yeah, there's no central narrative that's progressing.
So it's more of a leveling.
Like a legacy game.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's more of the leveling.
So it's more of a level-up game. I gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cool. Yeah, sounds good.
All right, so my number three is Santa Monica. This is an AEG game. This was a real surprise to us. So Santa Monica, the art style of it really connected with me. I love it. Has this Where's Waldo feel where every one of the beach tiles, you kind of look at it and you're like, oh, that's pretty cute. And then you might see a little person in it or a little detail in the shop or something that just stands out. It is very well made. It is from the same designer who did Cat Lady, Josh Wood. So Santa Monica, you are building the Santa Monica beach and pier. You're basically building out a boardwalk, and the currency in the game is you're able to pull from the front. It's a two-tiered tableau where you pull from the front and then the next card slides into place and a new card rolls out into the tableau. And so when you're pulling those cards, it's so tough because you know you want that second card back, but you don't really want to pay for it. You're using sand dollars as payment methods to do a couple different things there. It's a variable setup where you have slightly different rules and slightly different values to things. You're moving these little, really well-made screen-printed meeples on the board where you have a visitor, you have a tourist, and so the tourist can go and go onto the beach volleyball court, and then you have another one who the VIP gets gives special points for going to specific things that are on your main board. Santa Monica is so well made, and it hit just at the right time. I think it was July or August. We saw it at our local local game store, Moxie. We saw it sitting there, and I said, I love Josh Wood's stuff, love the artwork. Let me go ahead and pick this up. Aaron was like, yep, we got the money. Let's do it. We picked it up. We played it that night. We played it the next day. We played it the next day. We played it seven times in the first 10 days that we owned the game. It wow, was awesome. It was originally frustrating for Aaron because I won the first couple of games just because I went with a specific, like, okay, I know this needs to go here and I'm going to wait for this piece and I'll leave a gap here. But then as soon as it clicked for her, she was beating me constantly. And so this is a really cool game. And I think this is one of the games that really touches into what quarantine looked like for our family, sitting there at night together, talking and building out this beach that we couldn't even go to. Santa Monica. Yeah. Oh, Santa Monica is a very, very cool game. And I'm glad it's in our library.
Yeah, that's it's definitely one I've seen, right? Familiar with, had no idea what it was about. And so now hearing you describe it through, I'm going to add it to my Amazon wish list here probably as well, because frankly, people keep asking me what I want, and all I really want is board games for Christmas. So
that's a great Christmas present too.
I will I'll add it to my list here. Rally Man's on there too. That was already on there. I need to play it before I play Bob in Arena, because I know he's played it 6 million times.
Oh, you know it.
On there, so
that sounds about right.
He's beta testing Draftosaurus right now while we speak. So
perfect.
I mean, it's alpha testing. So
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and Res Arcana is going to be on there too. Oh, there's some good stuff on there. All right, we are up to number three. For me, number three is, I feel like it's going to be on at least one other person's list here, probably a little higher, but this is thematically one of the best IP games I've played that was a solid game and not just a game built around an IP, and that's Pan Am from Funko Games. Pan Am didn't need to be Pan Am. It could be Planes to Ride, the Ticket to Ride plane
yeah,
version.
Yeah, it totally
I mean,
could.
It could it, but adding in the Pan Am theme and history and richness of that is so good. Pan Am looks on the board like, oh, okay, I'm going to play a version of Ticket to Ride, and plays nothing like that at all. It is one of the more fun games I played this year. When we got Pan Am and started playing it, Stuart, who's one of our four over at Game of Sidekicks, his wife works in higher ups in the aviation world, like travels around the world, does a lot of stuff with a bunch of different airplane companies. When we played this with her, and he played it with her first, she was so geeked out about it. And there's so many aspects that they made right just based on aviation, the terminology, the way they described the way the game plays out in game. She's like, oh, that totally makes sense, because you wouldn't, you know, you'd have to sell this if you were a smaller company. And that's how Pan Am made their money. And this, and she's just like geeking out over all the aspects of it. But outside of how well it hits for aviation nerds, it's also one of the smoother games I've played this year.
Yeah, it's also a really good game.
Yeah, it just plays so well round to round. I love the varying round aspects of the seven. I love the push your luck aspect of, do I sell? Do I buy? When do I build this plane? When do I not? And aesthetically, the game looks like it came right off of the pages of Mad Men advertisement. Mm-hmm. It is such a great, you know, 50s, early 60s throwback. The color scheme, even the little trays look like something that they would serve your meal on the Pan Am, you know, air flight on. So it's just top to bottom, just beautifully made game from Funko Games, and my number three for this year.
All right. Well, if we're going to talk thematic games,
yeah.
I think we can get into our number two.
Our number two. So this is a game. It's kind of in a series. I wouldn't call this cheating. It's not cheating like a re-release cheating. I'm just kidding.
ouch. So this is Ryan, let's go.
So this is our version of cheating on this list. It's a game that was released in a series. I think it is the best part of this series. I absolutely 100% love Unmatched Cobblin' Fog.
Yes.
This set is so good. I mean, I
Unmatched first played, in general is great.
Yeah. I first played Unmatched at Dice Tower Con 2019, and I came home, and I was talking to Anitra about it, and I was talking about how great this is, and you know, you do all this stuff, and it's so quick, and Star Wars Epic Duels, and blah, blah, blah. She's like, yeah, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And then, honestly, I think it kind of fell off the radar for us at that point because Anitra was just, like, not into it, and I clearly was doing a bad job of selling it. But we got it in for review. We got Cobblin' Fog in for review, and I was like, this is good because it's got Sherlock Holmes in it, and she digs Sherlock and, you know, Invisible Man and all this stuff. And I played with Asher, and we finished, and he's like, Dad, can we play again?
Yeah.
Like,
that's
yes.
a good sign.
Yes. And then the next morning, Asher says to me, Dad, can we play again? I'm like, dude, I got to go to work. Maybe you can play with Mom. And, you know, the rest is history. I really do think that Cobblin' Fog is the best set out of all the sets that they've released. Although I am super excited for the Little Red Riding Hood Beowulf set.
Just a heads up, Little Red is one of my favorite players to play as. She has she has this basket system that at the time, and I don't know that anything massively changed, but the basket system is that cards have a certain iconography to it, and it does specific things as to what is at the top of your discard pile. So depending on the icon that is at the top of your discard pile is what's in your basket. Holy mackerel, dude. It is...
I love it. I'm in. And I know the board has like doors.
Yes.
Now, so you can shut doors behind you as you're running away.
That's
great.
Cool.
But we're talking about Cobblin' Fog right now. Oh, we got Buffy in also. I haven't had a chance to play that yet. But we like Cobblin' Fog so much we went out and started buying all of the other sets.
Yes.
It's so excellent. I love playing as the Invisible Man. I love the way the mist works.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The way that you can move around the board. I love like that kind of like 1800 London aesthetic.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it fits Unmatched super well anyway, but also I love that aesthetic in a game. And it just like it hit everything for me. It got Anitra into it, which makes me even more thankful.
Well, and just, it should be telling.
So it's so good.
Now that I've tried the Buffy set, I gotta say that Buffy as a character is the most like how I usually play fighting games, which is just hit things hard over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But from Cobblin' Fog, I really, really, really enjoy playing as Sherlock Holmes, who has to be a little bit tricky and try to predict what's in his opponent's hand. And if you can predict stuff successfully, then you massively
I hate that
opponent.
When Erin does that to me. She does that to me on the regular. Like it, oh man.
It feels so satisfying.
It really is.
I love it.
So
yeah, Unmatched in general, but specifically Cobblin' Fog made our number two for the year because it's just everything about it. We keep coming back to it. Even over the other Unmatched sets and say, we want to play this one again.
Yep. My number two is going to be a short conversation because it is also Pan Am. My number one will be an even shorter conversation because you just heard about it. Pan Am is, oh man, Pan Am's good. I taught my mom how to play Pan Am over the Thanksgiving holiday. She sat there saying, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing. What am I doing? Why would I do that? And then she ended up like coming within 2 points of beating me. And so I was like, what are you talking about?
All right.
It is such a smooth game. It's beautiful. The components are great. I don't know. It's a light game, but it has some depth there. And actually, it's kind of funny. Over Thanksgiving, this is the first time this had ever happened. The stock market in Pan Am was so low. It fluctuated between $2 and $3 for stock the whole time. The very, I know, it's crazy. Just the variable setup of pulling cards randomly out of that, out of those mission cards or year cards. So I set them up. It fluctuated the whole game. Last round, there is a, the seventh stage of the game. There is a card that pulls the stock price all the way up to the top, which is, I think, $11.
Yep. 12, 11?
And you have to sell everything to Pan Am?
Yes. And so that's the card that we pulled. So,
oh, no.
So we sit there, and my sister-in-law is sitting there. She's like, do I wait just another minute? I'm just going to wait a minute, because if it goes up to 5 or 6, it's not that bad. I sat there. I was like, I'll just buy as much as I can, but I'll leave a little money back. It went all the way. It skyrocketed in the last round, and we just sat there not knowing what to do. But it was it was still fantastic to play. It was so good. So,
great game.
Yep.
Yeah. Good stuff.
What do you got, Isaac?
We are at number 2. I bounced 1 and 2 back and forth on my list because 1 I played a lot recently, and 1 I played a lot more towards the beginning of the year. Both are heavier games, both from the same company. I have to go with number 2 as my re-implementation, re-release, thank you, of a very popular game from 2014, and that is Rococo Deluxe Edition from Eagle Griffin Games. I did not play Rococo the first time. When it first came out, it was actually my first year at Origins in 2014. First, like, was there for the whole, like, more than just a Sunday family day. We went in 2013. And I remember being there that year, seeing the pictures of the woman on the cover and knowing and seeing, oh, what is this game? It's all over the place. Oh, it's about making dresses and there's like jewelry involved and it's a ballroom gown. I was like, nope, not for me. I am here to play. Yeah, I'm here to play 2 games. I'm here to play Settlers of Catan, large floor edition, because, you know, I was a pretty new gamer still. And I was there to play. Yeah. And I was there to play the other game I was obsessed with, was Munchkin. And so,
Here's the growth of Isaac.
Absolutely.
Right? Oh, it's such a big difference. But like, Munchkin was that perfect, you know, party game for us at the time. Played it, loved it. Got to meet John Kovalik. Nice. Had him do an original piece of art for me on this big wooden box that had all my Munchkin stuff. It was a cool moment. Like, but I remember seeing that artwork and thinking like, this isn't for me. Right? Fast forward to 2020 and Rococo Deluxe Edition shows up on my doorstep. And I go, what is this about? Making ballroom? Okay, yeah. I did want to play this. Okay, get it on the table. There's 2 guys that I've been kind of intermittently playing with this year that are good friends. We're all kind of, you know, like, well, we'll get together and play outside some, or, you know, not play too much. But I told both of them, hey, we're going to play this game. Okay, what's it about? We're making dresses in the Victorian era, and we're sending them to a ballroom. They're like, nope, not interested. I'm like, no, trust me, guys. You're going to love this. And man, they loved it. The game is beautiful. The game is a table hog. I'm looking at my giant collection of boxes right now to my left, and it is probably 2nd biggest box over here that isn't Tidal Blades. It is a large box with a lot of good stuff in it. They made the silk and thread minis that just, the components look amazing. The artwork by Ian O'Toole is just outstanding. When you play this game, if you've never had a chance to play it, it's all in this box. All the expansions, all the stuff that they've released for it over the years, it's all here. You don't have to overpay it for a game that was, you know, obviously tough to find before they re-released it here. But Rococo Deluxe Edition is a beautiful big game that just plays very smoothly as you're trying to make these dresses. You're selling them to people who are wearing them in the ball. You're also trying to establish positions in these different ballrooms for area control. It's definitely was my very close to number 1. I slid it in at number 2 for my 2020 pick here.
I kind of want to know more about this game. I was kind of like you. I saw the game and I listened to watched the Married with Board Games podcast and YouTube channel, and Lara was obsessed with this game. She loved it. That was it though. Like, they never did like a playthrough or anything like that. And I was like, well, whatever. And just hearing you talk about it like this, I got to admit, it makes me curious. So
I want to play it all the time. Like, it is the game that I want to get out and just set it up. One, because it looks beautiful, and just set it out. But there's this pressure and movement, and every good game to me has, I want to do, you know, these 100 things, but I can only do 80 of them. And every time I play it, I can try a different route, but I can still only maybe get to 81 or 82. I can never quite get to 100. Right. And no matter which route you choose in this game, and there's different angles to come at it, you have a chance to stay in the game. And there's something about the card handling in this that's very similar to Concordia. There's that hand management where the card you're playing affects the action you take. And as you play these three cards each round, they go into a discard pile that if you're getting too many good cards, you might not see those cards back for another 2, 3, 4 rounds. But if you keep your hand small, you'll have a better chance at playing them. It's just not only that the actions that you're doing on the board, but that hand management adds a really neat aspect too. And like my number one pick will be, I love games that have a primary action. And if you're doing really well, there's also a secondary action that you can, you know, kind of build off of, similar to like Ryan, you're talking about with Pipeline. Right. If you just straight up play Pipeline and only take the primary actions, you're probably going to lose. You need to learn how to manage both those primaries and secondary actions well. And this game really wants you to do that.
That must be part of why you like Fort as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. The building those abilities to kind of, you know,
those private
chain
actions.
Your actions. Yeah, absolutely. Because it lends for, this game is easy, but if you really want to get into the weeds, there's a lot of choices you can make as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, wow, here we are. We've got our number ones to go. But before we get into that, let's talk about something a little bit different. We've been getting into gradually like games that we're more and more excited about, and we're talking about more and more because we love them so much. We're going to pivot this. We're going to talk about our biggest disappointments of the year. This doesn't mean a bad game. This means
it could mean a bad game.
But it doesn't necessarily. It doesn't for us. For us, this disappointment was really a reflection of how ridiculously high our expectations were. Like, unfairly.
That's a good way to put it.
And what we got out of the box. And for us, that game was Mariposas. I mean, Wingspan's amazing. Tussie Mussie is excellent. We really enjoy both of those. And not only do we enjoy both of those, but they're very different games that are both really, really well done. And so, I mean, we pre-ordered Mariposas. We were super excited to get it. We got the phone call from the FLGS, ran out. We got it. We played it that weekend and we're like,
eh, it was fine.
It's fine. As soon as we finished, I looked at each other. I was like, we're going to need to play this again because I don't really know where this was. Like, Isaac, you mentioned that thing where it's like you want to do 100 things, you can only get to 80. Mariposas, I feel like I can only get to like 25. It was so unfulfilling, I think, for us that it was just really, really disappointing. Again, I want to play it more. I'm almost thankful that I don't have to review it because we bought it. You know what I mean? You know what I mean.
Oh, I know. I know what you mean.
But yeah, so that was it for us. And I mean, you know, I hope we don't like take a shellacking in the community or anything, but
we love you, Elizabeth Hargrave.
Yes.
Mariposas is still
how many
a good
plays
game.
In are yeah. you for it?
Just two now. It just even the second time it was like,
it's like, okay, we understand.
Yeah, I mean, it was
more.
Just, it was so hard to get any kind of momentum going in that game both times that it was like, you know, we'll get to it and we'll play it more, I'm sure.
Yeah. I've played it twice. Again, it was a friend that got it and we played it early on in the summer and I really liked it. I have not gotten back to it, partly because of what you just said. It's a game that's on my, I wouldn't mind having this, but it's not sitting on my stack of, you know, X amount of games I need to review. So, it's on my Christmas list, but it's interesting that you mentioned that aspect of that one or two times of feeling just stuck. That first time we played Pan Am, I felt Like, are you kidding me? I can't do anything in this game.
Did you
like,
play it at 4 players?
We played it at 3 the first time, and felt so stuck. And then we played it at 4 the second time, and I'm like, I still can't do anything. And it wasn't until I started getting the rhythm of the game and really understanding when to push my figures ahead and, you know, and seeing what the game wanted me to do, right, that I felt like I had a better handle of that. But I totally see where you're coming from with that being. And that's why I kept going back to Pan Am, because I'm like, everybody keeps saying this is good. I think this is probably good. I'm just missing something in my play. And I wonder if, you know, with Mariposas, if there's a piece of that too, right?
Well, you know, and I didn't hear a lot of people screaming and yelling about how amazing the game was. And I think that if I had, we probably would have been more driven to get the game out and play it more.
Right.
Like, there was a lot of excitement, the game's coming out, and then it came out, and that was it.
Then there wasn't much after that.
I mean, that happens with games, right? There's the whole Cult of the New and all this stuff, and I get that. But those really, truly excellent games, like your Wingspan, like your Pan Ams, they have longer tails on them.
People keep talking about them because people keep having so much fun with them.
Or, you know, people didn't buy it in the first wave, so they pick it up on the second because the people who did get it in the first talked about it. And there was just none of that kind of cyclical news cycle on Mariposas was there. And so that's kind of where it landed for us. We'll play it more for sure. I've got a personal goal of culling somewhere between 20 and 50 games before the end of the year, and Mariposas is not on that list. But Anitra's laughing at me.
You're going to pick one per day to call? You know.
It's the same laugh that Aaron gives me when I'm like, I'm going to get rid of 20 games. Yeah. No, I'm not.
10 maybe.
I'm going to put them in a pile and then forget about them, and then they're going to get back on the shelf.
Yeah, that's what I did this week. I got rid of 2, though, so that's good.
It's the same with a 0.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that was our disappointment this year was Mariposas.
Okay. My disappointment has to be, so in 2019, at Origins 2019, I saw a game called Nevada City, and I got super excited because it was worker placement, it was farming, economics, city building, it was a Western theme, which is weird because I wouldn't say that I like Western stuff, but somehow I have an entire corner built out of just Western themed games, which is really odd because I didn't plan on collecting those. And I couldn't find where to play Nevada City. And then one day I stumbled upon the designer, Alan Ernstein, and he had the one copy of Nevada City, which was a production copy, from what I understand. We played with him, and it was a game that exists. And I never looked back at that game.
Okay.
But it was released this year. So, yep. It's a game.
Yeah, it is a game, it sounds like.
Did anybody else play that?
I have not. No, it's...
Okay. I was running around like a maniac at Origins 2019. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, so it was... I played this... I think I played it with Aaron and Rick, or Aaron and Bob. I struggled to enjoy parts of it because as I'm playing, I'm like, oh, well, this game does this part better. This game does this part better.
I hate that feeling.
This game... It was so hard to enjoy it for what it was because I felt like it was a lot of parts that didn't work well together. And it was released this year. It was released in 2020. And I did look at it. I can't remember when it was released, but I remember knowing that it was coming out and I was like, yeah, I don't know that I could play it again. So that was Nevada City.
It's a game.
Yep.
Quote.
Speaking of a game that is just a game, I got this, wasn't on my radar, wasn't something I was looking for. However, the box art alone, when it showed up on the porch, is like, okay, all right. I like to think I have a green thumb. I like plants. Maybe this game, Succulent, will be a fun game.
I knew you were going to say those words.
So Succulent is a game. It is an abstract game. So I thought right there, okay, my wife's going to, and I will preface that I told my wife, I asked her what game I kind of went through lists of some of the 2020s and I said, like, what game is your favorite from this year? She said Calico was her favorite. And my number six, Sorcerer City, was also on her top list. And I said, well, what of these games we've all played, which ones do you not like? And I start going through the list and she's like, I don't know, like, you know, this was okay and that was okay. I'm like, okay, well, mine is going to be Succulent. And she said, why? I mean, that was kind of fun. I'm like, there's the kick. It was kind of fun. There are too many good games that I can be playing, and kind of fun isn't going to do it. This game is visibly on the table. Okay, I'm sorry. On the box cover, a beautiful box cover. When you put it on the table, if you guys haven't played this, you start with these face down giant tiles that are like gray stone and they're just ugly. And that's what you're mostly looking at for the whole game. You're slowly adding these little succulent garden pieces that are like one, two, or three squares, but it's a slow build to that. The cards that you're vying for, not that pretty either. There's kind of a splendor feel to this as you're trying to like save up the right things to buy these point cards that award you more things that you can build up your little succulent garden. But it was similar to what Brian was saying. It was a game that was like, well, but Splendor does that better. Right. Like, or there's parts of it that kind of have a Sagrada feel to it. It's like, well, but I'd rather play Sagrada or role player at this point. So there's too many pieces of it that were not just jamming and gelling right. But for me, visibly, it just didn't look good. It was very bland for a game that, frankly, for the thing we're talking about, for Succulents, should have been a lot prettier. And I just didn't think it was. And so Succulent was my visible to the cover disappointment once we actually got into playing. And I gave this one a chance. Like I just looked, we played this six times. Like I, like my wife enjoys it, which is why it hit the table a little more often. And we introduced it to, you know, we played with the kids, we played with our friends. We played it just the two of us a couple times. Like I gave it a shot. And if she said, hey, I want to play Succulent tonight, I would get it off the shelf. I had it actually in my stack of games I was hoping to get rid of here, but after talking to her tonight, it went back on the on the Calyx. So, but you know, if she said she wanted to play it, sure, I'd play it. But I'm not. It's again what you said. It's not that it's the worst game I played this year. It just was more of a like, eh, this was okay.
Sure.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that. So it's interesting to hear kind of the it's okay. And you said something else that, you know, I'm going to reiterate because I think it's so important. It's no longer enough for something to just be okay or to even be halfway decent, right? Like board game creators have raised the bar so much over the last 3 to 4 years. Like, it's just, I mean, games to rise above have to be truly excellent. And I mean, that's exciting for board games in general. But yeah, it does mean that it's a whole lot harder to stand out, right?
Oh, for sure. And this one is that game that, you know, probably 4, 5, 6 years ago would have been sitting on the shelf, you know, at Rio Grande or at, you know, at right next to some of the releases at the time and probably would have been pretty darn popular. Right. But you know, at the point we're in now, it's kind of a, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. All right. It's time.
All right. It's time.
It's time for time our for number ones.
Here we go.
So, comedy time. Our number one is Pan Am.
Hey!
Okay. Which is why
I've heard about this one.
Yeah, we've heard about this game. It's one of the reasons why we were kind of quiet before. We're like, yeah, we agree with you. Yep.
Well, so I wanted to save this moment to ask you guys if you've tried it at all three different player counts, 2 players, 3 players, and
yes.
4 players. Because
yes,
I have to say
I've actually only 2 and 3. I actually haven't played it at 4 players yet. So we've played many times at 2 and 3.
It's super weird to me how quickly the feel of the game changes at each of the different player counts.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, it's the thing that for me, like, really, really elevates this game is it's a completely different game at all 3 player counts. It's completely, completely different.
I'm going to say that personally, I would prefer to play either at 2 or 4 and not so much at 3. 3 is ruthless.
Because at 3, yeah. So at 2 players, everybody has 5 engineers. At 3 players, everybody has 4. And at 4 players, everybody has
3.
Do you have 3?
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's just 3.
Yeah, so it's 10 and then 12 and then 12. But by the time you get to 4 players, after a round or 2, You kind of need to get into it. The strategies become divergent enough that it's fine that you have that many engineers.
There's not a lot of spots to take at four players, but also everybody has so few engineers to use that everybody is being super careful and intentional about where they place their guys. Whereas with three players, it's easy to just be like, oh, I put my guy there. I don't really care that much, but it blocked you.
Yeah, and at two, you're just like, ah, I guess I'll take that move too. Sure, yeah, why not?
At two players, I mean, it's a laid back, chill experience. You're just kind of like, hey, this is fun, da da da, you're doing all this stuff. And then once those player counts go up, the game gets tighter and tighter and tighter and just plays totally different. And it's just, in that way, it's a masterpiece. And, you know, I agree with everything you said before about just the look and the feel of the game is tremendous. We could play it with our kids. We could play it with our friends. I know that we personally, because of our personal recommendations, have sold at least six copies of this game because we won't stop talking about how great it is. Everybody in my local friends group, every single one of us has a copy of the
game.
Has
bought their own copy now.
Nice.
It's so good. It's so, so, so good. And it's cheap. And it's at Target. It's $30 at Target. Mm-hmm. I mean, that level of gameplay at that price point, at that availability, is you can't get that anywhere else. In fact, as we turn it over to Ryan, I'm going to say that all of those features make it unmatched.
I like what you did there. Unmatched Goblin Fog is by and far the best set in the Unmatched world. Unmatched is a series that when we were at Origins at the time when it was pre-release, they were demoing it, and I cared not a thing about Unmatched. Couldn't give two flips about it. Like, I just
tried to sell me on it.
The idea of it didn't even excite me for a minute. And I was like, whatever. So I passed by it multiple times, didn't even look in that general direction. You know, I was at the restoration booth and talking to the guys and didn't care to even stand around to watch it being played. We got a copy of Volume 1 and fell in love with it. Unmatched is the game that Aaron and I play the most. We've got at least 40 plays under our belt this year of Unmatched. We started a thing called Friday Night Fights on our YouTube and Facebook channels that started as a result of the pandemic and Aaron and I wanting to spend some time together and also create streaming content. It is the number one watch thing on our channel by far. It's a little annoying because if we don't do a Friday night fight 2 weeks in a row, I actually get notes on all of my YouTube videos. When's That's the awesome. Next Friday night fight? Why didn't you record this week? Hey, can you do this one next week? Where were you guys this week? It's nice, but it's also like, golly, guys. The whole month of October, we just didn't do it on Friday nights because we were doing very, very small game nights where we had a couple over and we played games with them, just trying to have social time. Unmatched Goblin Fog's fantastic. Every one of the fighters, top notch. It is the way that you should enter into the Unmatched universe, getting that set, playing with those fighters. It is so good. And so Unmatched Goblin Fog, number one game of 2020, Unmatched as a system is seriously, I've got everything but Bruce Lee. I will continue to collect this until whenever.
Yeah, I think this is right there with you. Have you played with Bruce Lee, by the way?
I haven't. I didn't. It's kind of like the whole reason why I didn't look at the game in the first place. I really don't care that much about the character.
Oh, but
you know?
his mechanics are so cool because
really?
Do you know anything about how he works?
Very, very little.
He's very much death by a thousand punches kind of thing, whatever the saying is.
A thousand cuts?
A thousand cuts, yes.
Gotcha.
Because what his attacks allow you to do is draw a card and take another action. And so it's like, oh, I only dealt one or two, you know, hit point worth of damage, but then I hit you again, and then I hit you again, and eventually you have no defense left.
I
just keep hitting you. And it's such a if you know how to play Bruce Lee, it's so fun even to get the crap kicked out of you by Bruce Lee because you're just watching the mechanics of the deck play out, and it's just kind of hilarious and also awesome at the same time.
Nice.
It's really fun to play against. It's frustrating to play against him, but kind of if you know what's going on, you can have a really good time. I played as Robin Hood against Bruce Lee, and I pretty much just kept running away and shooting at him because if he got close, it was over. You know.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But
that's
it's such
cool.
A cool analog to like who Bruce Lee was as an actor and
you know,
the movies that he was in. It's a really fun character to play.
That's awesome. Yeah, Unmatched Goblin Fog number one.
All right,
cool. All day.
I need to play some Unmatched. I have not played it.
Wow.
Highly.
Hold on. What'd you say?
So here's
you haven't reasons. Played it.
Here's a couple reasons why. One. My wife's least favorite type of game, and she is my number one playing partner, right? Her least favorite is anything that is combat related. Anything that's like me versus you, she's not a fan, especially when it's two player. Like when it's combat back and forth. This game, you know, the more I looked into it, I was like, my son and I would play it, but there's like 100,000 games in my house that my son and I will play. And this is what I'm curious too. Did you guys grow up playing, or have you played Epic Duels, Star Wars Epic Duels?
No.
No, not at all.
Because I knew it existed, but I never played it.
The idea is that this is kind of the better version of that, right? Because it's the same. Yeah. It's Davio design again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Epic Duels I played when I was younger. I actually managed to find a copy at a garage sale years ago and I really enjoy that game. Have not dug it out. It's kind of on a shelf as like a, you know, my mini Queen's Gambit, right? Like I want to take care of this game, but I do enjoy that. So I'm interested to see what this does. And I love that because the characters were so cool in that game and the situations and be able to play like, oh, I'm going to put, you know, Boba Fett and Chewbacca together and watch, you know, watch what happens here. So it was a cool aspect of that. So I do look forward to trying this one out. It's just one of those that has not
unmatched. I mean, no matter who I play as, whether I'm Raptors or Ingen or Alice or Bigfoot, no matter who I play as, I enjoy the character for what it is because each deck is so specific to that character.
Yeah, it's like, so well tailored. It just feels like it fits and it makes sense with the mechanics of how each character can attack or not attack, as the case may be.
The amount of craft that goes into each of these characters, I admire Restoration Games for the amount of playtime, the amount of playtesting that goes in from the community. I mean, they're doing the right thing. I mean, even, you know, one thing that I get a little annoyed with, but I understand it, is the minute a new set is announced, 5 minutes later, somebody is saying, well, what's the next release after that? And I'm like, guys, Restoration is doing such a fantastic job. Like, think about what was released this year. Okay. Jurassic Park. All right. The 2-pack.
Yep.
We had Goblin Fog. We had Buffy the Vampire Slayer that just got released. We have another 2-pack that's coming out before Christmas if you pre-order right now. That's incredible. The amount of content they've put out for this one fighting system, and you're asking, you have the gall to ask again, like what else you got back there? You know, man, I don't know. I have a lot of respect for Restoration.
And by the Unmatched. Way, they're working on a gigantically huge game in Return of Dark Tower as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like they're doing, it's not like this is all they're doing. You know, this is on top of all their other projects.
Right. Well, definitely on my list. I will, especially after sitting here tonight, it needs to be higher up on my list. So it might move ahead of Mariposa's on my list. We'll see.
We'll see.
As we all browbeat you into being like, right. Come on, play the game.
All right. So that leaves me for the last of the number ones here. So my number one is not a family game. This is a game I play with my gamer friends. My wife would, she'd probably like it, and she hasn't tried it. She doesn't have any interest in it. My son would definitely try to play it. Up to this one, the heaviest game I had ever played was Splatter's Food Chain Magnate. And I love Food Chain. I love the aspects of that. But this game took it to that next level of just complexity. And that is Eagle Griffin Games On Mars. On Mars from Lacerda with art by Ian O'Toole. Up to this point, I had played a couple different Lacerda games. But like any of his games, you really need to get in the weeds with the game and play it a bunch of times to get a feel for it. There's a couple of things that make On Mars stand out for me. One is the theme. The game truly feels like we are out here, out on Mars. The first player is, it determines first player based on whoever has recently seen the Matt Damon Mars movie.
The Martian.
Which, by the way, is excellent.
It determines first player for the game. And so like you're colonizing Mars, and we've got a colony on Mars, and we've got the space station out, and there's two sides of this board, and every round you're traveling in the rocket from the space station to the Mars surface. Station to Mars, and you can do completely different things in each of those areas, and you have workers that you're signing out to do jobs, and there's only like five or six things in each place that you can do. So really fundamentally, and I think it was I can't remember, I saw this somewhere, but they were talking about how with a Lacerda game there's only like five or six different actions. It's all of the secondary things that really like make the game sing in complexity. And I can explain this game and sit down and teach it to somebody probably in like 15-20 minutes, but when you start having to realize the decisions you got to make in this game, that's where the complexity kicks in, and you're trying to decide, what actions do I take here? And if I leave to go to Mars, will my workers stay over on the colony? It's not until I go back over to the ship that I get my workers back. So there's this movement of, I've got to go back and forth to get my workers to gain more. There's just an intensity of trying to build this colony and then push this game further and further. As you move through the phases, like I said, there's a primary action, and then you unlock more and more secondary actions that interact so well with the other players on the board, based on what they're doing and what you're doing, and kind of tandemly working along with their strengths. A lot of moving parts in this game. I would say probably the first six or seven times I played this, we were constantly like, oh yeah, last time we did this wrong. Or, you know, just trying to, a game like this, there's so much going on that it really takes time to get a good feel for all the details of it. But I highly recommend it if you're looking to get into a Lacerda game and do a heavier game, and you like the space idea theme, this one is right there for you. So this is my number one of the years, On Mars from Eagle Griffin Games.
I still want the Galaris so bad. I love that game. It's a game I think about constantly.
Also a good one.
And I still need to get that game. So now I want to try On Mars. Great. Thanks.
See, for me, you're welcome, like, sir. I would have such a paradigm shift from all the stuff that I'm playing on a daily basis to something that's
heavy. For sure.
It would just bludgeon me across the face. You know? And I like heavier stuff. I mean, I define Zolkin as a heavier game. You can put that wherever you want. I know it's not quite as heavy as something like Food Chain Magnate, but I've got some friends in town that are really big Splatter fans, and we've been trying to get together and play something. Like, no, we're gonna schedule for both lunch and dinner in this one. But it's just a pandemic, and it's just been really hard to get together and get all that actually working. But yeah, I agree with you on the Galarist. That's a game that I've kind of had my eye on and kind of thought to me, like, there's, I'll never buy it because it'll never get played in my house, but I'd love to play it.
Yeah.
The only thing that makes me nervous about On Mars is because I've got a new and shrink copy of First Martians, and so like that Mars theme, I'm just like, oh, I want to stay away from it.
Well, I've explained to Andrew in the past, I love reading science fiction, but sci-fi space themed games have just repeatedly fallen flat with me, and I think it's because they're missing some of that human element that I find in the fiction that I read. And that seems to be present in games that are less fantastical. I don't know.
This one, the space theme is definitely there. I wouldn't say it's a heavily driven space storyline, but I'm lucky and blessed to be able to have a family that plays games. I'm lucky and blessed to have a couple of different game groups when things are normal that I get to play with once or twice a week. And there's a couple of guys I play with that, like, they're roll up their sleeves, let's play something heavy. And when we're playing a game like this, that's the group I'm playing this with. Because frankly, this isn't a game I want to teach new people every week at a game group how to play it, because it's going to take 5 hours with people who are, you know, AP prone or, you know, really struggle with some of that. But you get into a group where, you know, you got a group of guys or gals or whoever that enjoy a heavy game, and you get a couple of rhythms to that, you start to learn how to play off of each other. And it's just, it's a cool thing. And I know I'm lucky to have that. And I think that's why this game sits there. If I was 5 years ago, mainly just playing with, you know, my preteen kids and my wife, this wouldn't even be on my shelf right now. Right. So it's there for a reason. You know, it hit at the right time for me to be able to get it in.
That makes a lot of sense.
Very cool.
Perfect.
These are some solid lists.
I actually really like the variety, knowing, and I knew from the beginning we were kind of coming at these things from slightly different angles, and so there wouldn't be a ton of overlap. I'm actually I don't know if I'm surprised that Pan Am is on all of our lists.
It's a great game.
I think it speaks to all the boxes that it checks. It's a worker placement game, but it's heavy and light at the same time. There's this stock buying mechanic. There's this management of how many planes are on your board. And there's so many things that are going so well for Pan Am. And I'm glad that it's on all of our lists. I think we're going to see it on a ton of other lists this year.
I think so.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I remember when I went to New York Toy Fair, I went with the folks at Engage Family Gaming, and they had an appointment with Funko. And I did not. And so when we did our kind of post-mortem after that, they were like, this game's coming out. It's called Pan Am. It looks awesome. I didn't get a chance to play it, but I saw it and it looks so good and you're going to love it. I'm like, okay.
Sure.
And then I did. And consequently, it's our number one game of the year. So.
Yeah, good choices, all everybody.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much for getting together and doing this little roundtable thing.
Thank you for the invite.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So let's go around the horn. Ryan, where can people find you on the internets?
Yeah, check us out at oneboardfamily.com. You can follow us on all the social media sites at oneboardfamily. That's B-O-A-R-D, oneboardfamily.
All right, sweet. And don't forget to harass him about not playing Unmatched on Friday nights.
Oh, yeah, you can find our YouTube channel. Unmatched, please. So two quick things. If you could not tell us what role we got wrong or that we didn't use our special ability. Hey, listen, it's a Friday night. It's the end of the week. We're doing our best. We're raising three kids. We both got jobs. Just chill, okay? If I forgot to use Dracula's ability, maybe it's because my brain's too full, you know? So just give us a break and you don't have to comment because I already saw it. And I already beat myself up over it. So just enjoy the video. And if you don't like it, don't subscribe. Anyway.
All right. Woo.
Tell them, look at
Friday night fights. Some Fridays. Not all Fridays. But some.
A little more fight in the Fridays, it sounds like.
There's some teasing.
I get a little testy about that. Every once in a while, I'll get a comment. Oh, you forgot to use the ability here in the 14 minutes and 32 seconds. And I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I was the one who lost, you know? I feel bad for myself. Like, you don't have to point it out.
Thanks for rubbing it in. You
did not have to feel the agony of defeat, friend. Good job.
Exactly.
All right, Isaac, where can people find you?
We are over at gamingwithsidekicks.com. You can find us, like Ryan said, on all of the socials. We're pretty active on Instagram, over on Facebook. We have a Game with Sidekicks board game community page. On the Twitter as well as YouTube as well. Podcasting, we do intermittently at best. We're trying to get a little better with everybody's kids and schedules. Always presents a challenge, but it's fun to be on this one and be able to put our like minds together and see what we came up with here.
All right. Awesome. And of course, you can find us on all the places at Family Gamers AA, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook community. You can go to thefamilygamers.com/community. And that's where you can find our stuff. So come on, check us out, join the community, talk about board games that are awesome, and we'll have a good time.
Excellent. Thanks again for having us.
All right. Well, thanks. Yeah. Thanks to you guys, and really appreciate it. And we'll be in touch for sure.
Thanks. Have a good one.
All right. Bye, guys.
Well, take care.
Great, that's it. It was a really fun time with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you all enjoyed it. I certainly learned a lot.
I think it says a lot that Unmatched, Cobble and Fog, and Pan Am were on multiple lists.
I think you're right.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I still can't believe that Isaac hasn't played Unmatched.
We'll have to make sure he gets that chance.
We're trying. Anyway, we mentioned a little bit about where you can get a hold of us. Anitra, let's go through the list. Where can people find us on the internet?
As we already said, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the like at Family Gamers AA.
You can also find our community on Facebook by going to thefamilygamers.com/community, or you can go to Facebook and just search for The Family Gamers Community. You'll find that. Lots of great stuff happening in there every single day. People posting about games that they're playing with their kids, or maybe even asking questions. I really love how the community comes together to answer everybody's questions. It's great.
I do too. Don't forget, you can email us if you want to.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, or leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks once again to our sponsor, First Move Financial, for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. You can go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
And I think that's going to be it for us this week. So, until next week, everybody.
Play games with your kids.